Thanks once again for downloading and listening to our podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net, a football fans podcast. Where do we go from here? I get St Anthony and Anthony Murray onto the podcast and we review the St Johnstone game. We talk about the Celtic statement, sort of, and then discuss the thing that everyone, every Celtic fan is discussing, what to do next. Anyway, this is Anthony Murray and St Anthony, and this is me, Harry Brady. So, a bit like the post-Ferencvaros game, where St Anthony was a voice of reason ahead of Anthony Murray, I thought we'd get St Anthony back on to see if he's the voice of reason with the manager. So I am joined by Anthony Murray and St Anthony. How you doing, boys?
Superb.
Been better.
Yeah, could be better. Before we delve into the manager's position and the latest club statement, we're turning into Rangers with statement o'clock. Before we delve into that, let's cover the game on Sunday. So, Anthony, what did you think about the team lineup on Sunday?
A bit of a groan, you know. No radical change, you know. Not the change we need. Just, all right, what didn't work 2 weeks ago or didn't work 1 week ago, we'll go back to the one that didn't work in between or before that. You know, this constant pattern of reverting back to the same mistake, thinking, all right, it wasn't a mistake once upon a time, so it'll work now. So obviously that's not going to work. And very quickly, I think it was about 10, 15 minutes in, maybe about half an hour, and I sent a message to a mate saying, do you know, this could be Albion Rovers v Clyde. Do you know what I mean? It just looked like a football match between two equally poor football sides. You know, it wasn't what we're used to, or what we've been used to for the best part of three decades. Celtic just dominating, you know. St Johnstone looked just as likely to score as we did.
Which was, neither team looked likely to score.
Yeah.
Saint, what did you make of the lineup?
I've got a theory, Harry, that one of the main things that's wrong with the team at the moment is if he's going to play a 4-2-3-1, then the two who you pick in the two have to be mobile and they have to be guys who will tackle and break up the play. So in essence, they're protecting the back four, and the last dozen games that we've played very, very poorly, we do nothing in midfield to protect that back four. And that's what makes us vulnerable, I think, because teams just play through us. You don't see anybody putting in a challenge. You don't see anybody putting in a tackle. Scott Brown, the best player in the world, should have been phased out in the last year or 18 months and played a lot less football than he has. And Callum McGregor is just a wasted talent in that role, because we've seen in recent weeks he gave away a penalty in the last minute against Aberdeen with a clumsy tackle, and he played the Sparta Prague guy on side at Celtic Park for a goal. And that just shows that Callum McGregor isn't comfortable in a defensive mode. He's an attack-minded player who in a 4-2-3-1 should be in the three, not in the two. So in terms of his... I share Anthony's concern there that it was just going through the motions and trying the same thing again. The other thing that we're really lacking, which is ironic, because about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, we had seven or eight wide men, decent wide men who you could have played at any given time. We don't have a winger in the team. The only wingers we've got are Forrest and Johnson, who are injured. And it's really painful watching the likes of teams only daft to double up in Frimpong, because they know he's quick, but he's not that quick. So he's been... his value to the team drops when teams double up on him. And then in the left-hand side, Laxall, in a lot of ways, is similar to Greg Taylor, in as much as he's not a forward-going player. He looks more comfortable as a full-back, not as a wing-back. And I actually think that we were spoiled with Tierney for a few years there, because Tierney was wonderful at getting down the left flank and getting crosses in. So in several areas of the park, we're just not performing, and I think it's shown in the last dozen games.
You mentioned there saying teams cutting through a midfield like a hot knife through butter, and somebody mentioned something to me on Friday, which then got me thinking to other stuff. And one of it is Hullboy, who, you know, from this parish, who often bemoans supporters picking out one guy as being at fault when we lose a goal, because his point is it's a team game, and invariably what's happened is a number of errors have taken place. Some of them are so subtle you don't even notice it unless you watch the goal over and over again. And it was a guy who mentioned to me, so I don't know what you think of this, Anthony, it was a guy just was saying there, talking about our midfield, it was a guy who mentioned to me on Friday about how Brown got great plaudits under Brendan Rodgers, but if you actually think about it, Brown stood still for 3 years in the middle of the park under Brendan Rodgers, never moved out of the centre circle, and just didn't move, and the ball was played to him, picked it up, and then he moved it on. And I was thinking about how everybody was saying that Brown was finished under Ronnie Dyla, where he was expected to be running about the middle of the park. Then Brendan comes in and he stands still for 2.5 years, and now Neil Lennon has come in and he's expected to move about the middle of the park again. And then getting back to your point, saying about Callum McGregor. So the problem then is Callum McGregor's running about the middle of the park trying to cover for the fact that he's got a nearly 36-year-old. So regardless of whether Brown was finished under Ronnie Dyla or not, the fact is that he's 4 or 5 years older than he was under Ronnie Dyla. So you've got a nearly 36-year-old Brown who just obviously is not going to have the same ability as somebody. And so Callum McGregor's then running about to try and cover for Scott Brown's space.
The problem with Brown, Harry, is that he wasn't one of those players who relied on his technique through his career. So you know how you get some players who can play a wee bit longer because they've got a football brain and they can basically, you know, somebody like Paul McStay, for example, who was very technical, gifted, and he could spread the ball about. He could make the ball do the work. Scott Brown never really had that in his game. Scott Brown's game was about energy, it was about dynamism, it was about getting about the park, getting forward, getting back. He was a box-to-box player. Scott Brown at his best is a wonderful player, and I'm not trying to decry him. All I'm saying is that there's been no forward thinking in the club to giving, sort of fading him out of things, because he can't last forever. And at that age, you can't expect him to have the same basic energy levels as what he had 5 or 6 years ago. It's just not on.
Anthony?
The thing that stuns me about it is that the parallel with the end of Lennon's career. That, I mean, if you watch footage of Lennon, the Leicester player, you know, Lennon, the Leicester player, was a much more dynamic player than the one that we got. You know, Neil brought him in, sat him next to Lambert, and he did all the shovel work in midfield. He was brilliant at it, as good as we've had at it. But by the end of Lennon's Celtic career, you were kind of sick of it. I was kind of thinking, we need to bring in someone more dynamic. You know, we're Celtic. We shouldn't have a guy just sitting there spraying sideways passes, you know, just that shield. I understand it needs to exist, but I kind of thought you want someone that can do that and also, you know, spray a 40-yard diagonal, or, you know, or carry the ball or do something more progressive. And at that time, we bring in Brown, you know, a young Brown who looks like that. You know, a guy who is going to tear about and cover every blade of grass and hit shots and hit long passes and do everything. But Brown's career has been so odd. He has been good at times. He's been not as good at other times. But like you say, Rodgers was the guy that got the best tune out of him, ultimately, which was eliminate the complications from his game and just make him the pivot. But yeah, if you remove him from that pivot responsibility, it's not going to work. And it may be, I mean, maybe if Rodgers was still here, his old job wouldn't work, you know? Maybe his legs have just gone. I think it looks like that now. I remember the last game of football I ever played, you know, 11s, you know, taking a hit and just falling over and just feeling old. You know, I'm sure if there was footage of it, it would have looked comical. And there was one chance the other day, or yesterday, I don't know if it was Stevie May's one or... No, it was an attacking chance at the start of the second half where the keeper made a good save. But Brown kind of just sort of fell in to go for an attacking header and kind of missed it. And if you just watch him, it's like Pinocchio with his strings cut. You know, he's just... You know, he's not falling like an athlete anymore, let alone moving like an athlete anymore. You know, I mean, he's not. He's past it. It's obvious.
If I look back, I mean, I actually nearly fell asleep in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it, genuinely nearly fell asleep. But I do think we created more in the first half, which was dull as dishwater, as we did in the second half. The first half, if you are Neil Lennon and you believe in yourself and you still think you can do something, you're going to persuade yourself that on another day Edwards scores his chance and on another day Tom Rogic puts his head on the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
The second half, actually, somebody, as I was watching the game, I went on to Twitter and somebody then had just tweeted, I can't remember who it was, somebody had just tweeted what I was thinking as I was watching the game, which was at this point being played wholly 30 yards from, we were playing 30 yards from St Johnson's goal and not looking like we could ever score. And so I went on and somebody said, you just know St Johnson are going to break up the park and score. So Saint, did you see it coming, St Johnson's goal?
I've been of the opinion this has been coming for some time. My son was telling me something interesting there that it was a year ago to the day since we beat Hamilton at Parkhead on a cold Wednesday night when Scott Brown got the winner in injury time. And I remember running about that period, there was games we were playing and I'm saying to you, Michael, one's not even at Celtic Park, one's not enough. This team is not capable of hanging on to a one goal lead. And now we're in a position a year later that when it's nothing each, and the longer the game goes at nothing each, we're a very vulnerable looking team. You can just feel the nerves coming from the players. And that's causing two things. Number one, it's causing us to be edgy in defence. So teams obviously sense this. And St Johnson were nearly after a couple of good attacks before they scored. You know, the goal didn't really come as a shock. I think one of you were saying there that St Johnson were giving as good as they were getting at that point. But the other thing as well is, and this is a more damning thing for me, you've got guys like Rogic and Edward, and you've got Ryan Christie in there, who are potential match winners for us, and they look terrified to try something in case it doesn't come off. And that just all comes into confidence. And there's nothing you can do to get that confidence back. It will come back at some point, hopefully. But, you know, we're in the middle of a really bad run here. It's a horrible thought that it can actually get worse before it gets better.
So, Anthony, St Johnson's goal, did it come as a surprise to you?
Before the game, it struck me that for the first time since I think we signed Andy Tong, we're going in a league game and I'm not thinking we're going to win this. You know, there's no genuine confidence that we're going to win this. So we've had 25 years of utter optimism. So, I don't know, maybe it's our time. That's the way it goes. Within the play of the game, I'd seen enough of Stevie May running around to be concerned. And this is one of the criticisms I get, you know, from appearing in these podcasts and stuff, is that an over-enthusiasm for SPFL players and Scottish players that I see. And bear in mind, beyond the highlights I watch on YouTube, the only real games I watch are Celtic games. So I never really factor in how appalling we are at the back. You know, the flat track bullies that we've got along our back two or back three, whatever it may be on a given day. And I go away thinking that, you know, Ross Stewart of Ross County is really good. Stevie May's really good. When really they're just giving a bunch of shysters a run around. Our shysters, you know, love them to bits, but they're not great footballers. And I'd seen enough of Stevie May stretching us and O'Halloran stretching us. I think he was on at some point to think, yeah, they're, you know, we're not going to hold up here. And then when the goal is scored, yeah, a nice through ball, threaded down the left, crossed over, tapped in. You know, no major surprise whatsoever.
The surprise for me is that we equalised.
The slimiest goal we'll ever score. Join, that was Rangers in the Champions League 1993 level of jammy. That was a funny goal. You could only laugh.
So Saint, we lose, we draw the game one each. Anthony called for the manager to be sacked on here after the Ferencváros game, and you've been more inclined to give him a period of time to try and turn it around. What's your position on the manager now?
I don't think getting put out of the Champions League is necessarily a sacking offence in August, because you're up against champions of other countries. There has to be a respect there that you're playing a decent level of team, and to be fair to Ferencváros, they qualified for the... When they beat us, they went on to qualify for the work to them. I think it's a different thing in domestic football, but when you're playing, and I don't want to be condescending here, you're playing very mediocre teams on a regular basis. And it's got so bad now, as Anthony was saying there, that I share his concern about the 25-year thing. I think there might have been a few games under Tony Mowbray that I was quite pessimistic and I thought we weren't playing well. But overall, you know, he's quite right there that this is a horrible, horrible feeling that we are experiencing. I put a tweet out this morning and it was sort of half in jest, half serious, when I said that Hearts must be the potentially the favourites for the forthcoming cup final, because we are playing so bad, we're barely winning a game. And if they're in a good run of form, even at a lower division, you have to actually suspect that Hearts will fancy their chances and they'll come to Hampden and whatever the result is, they're going to give us a right good game. Now, going back to, as you were asking there about the manager, I was with him. I was uncomfortable, but I was with him up until the Ross County game. And I thought the Ross County game was so bad that anybody with any great affection for Celtic would know at that point that that's it. There comes a point, does it matter if it's Celtic or it's Brechin City or it's Albion Rovers or it's Barcelona, does it matter what level you're at? There comes a level that when the team plays poorly and hit rock bottom, then changes have to be made, and brave directors will make change because they will see it as necessary. And I think to stumble on with Neil Lennon at the moment is actually unkind to Neil Lennon, because the pressure the man's under must be enormous. And there comes a point you've just got to say, enough's enough, and make the decision for him. And I'm disappointed in him in one respect, because I did think over the course of the last 2 weeks or so that he would have had the decency to go with a wee bit of dignity, because I don't want to see Neil Lennon's... His reputation sullied in any way, because he's been a wonderful player. He was a great captain, and twice I think he's been a good manager. He's won his trophies and he's got us out of hole on a couple of occasions. And I don't want to see that reputation called into disrepute. But the longer he's there, the messier it's going to get, because more and more people are just turning against him. And it's that this is it's going to be messy.
I jokingly tweeted that Jerry McSherry's in the middle of writing a letter to the Evening Times, saying that Neil Lennon, that we're being too quick. That actually came from a text from one of my brothers asking me if I thought there was a single Celtic supporter out there who thought Neil Lennon should still be in a job.
This has nearly been unkind to Neil Lennon, because at the end of the day, football is a very basic game. Managers are judged on results, to a certain extent performances, but mainly the results. And the last dozen games have been criminal. It's not just the fact we haven't been winning games, it's the fact that the level of performance is totally and utterly unacceptable.
Do you think there's any Celtic fans who think Neil Lennon should stay on as manager?
That's hard to say. I mean, in my heart of hearts, I would love to see him turn it around. I would love to see, Lofty Sheets come out the weekend and win 4 or 5 nil, and the phrase I keep using is, when are we going to turn a corner? And it's getting to the stage, it's a very straight road, there's not many corners for turning. And the only one, everybody keeps talking about Alec Ferguson at Manchester United, because famously he was down in his luck, and they said that he got to the stage that he was playing the famous game against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup, but it was basically known if he lost that game he was going to get sacked, and he managed to scrape by that game and go on a wee run. But for every example of Alec Ferguson, there's 100-fold the managers that were given another Nottingham Forest game and get beat 3-0 and get sacked, and quite rightly get sacked, because, as I said there, this isn't a personal vendetta against Neil Lennon. I love Neil Lennon to bits. I am totally appreciative of everything that he's achieved. For the day that he walked into Celtic Park, he's Celtic to the core, he's Celtic through and through. But at the end of the day, as a supporter, I want my team to win. And when you get to the stage that you're getting beat at home with Ross County and you can't beat St Johnson, in fact, you were lucky to get a draw against St Johnson at Celtic Park, these aren't isolated results. The last dozen games has been a pattern. You know, it's not just the fact that we're not winning games. It's a fact that you can tell there's something not right. Something deep inside the club isn't right.
You mentioned the last dozen games, and this is my issue with it. Name me a decent 90 minutes we put in this season.
I know. I think a lot of the last minute goals papered the cracks, and the hope at that point was that we would start playing better, and we would look upon those last minute goals as something of a bonus. But now it looks as if it was just, as I said, it was covering up the big giant cracks that have now begun to appear and can't get papered up any longer because they're so noticeable.
So, Anthony, this is... the reason I was asking if there's any supporters, because obviously the board have come out again tonight and said, we back the manager, right? And this is where I think, and getting back to Saint's point about Neil Lennon, I think Neil Lennon's in the position of, he believes in himself. And so, as I said earlier, whilst we look at the St Johnson game as another game where it didn't look like we were going to score and St Johnson scored and we got a lucky goal, he looks at it, I'm sure, from the perspective of, on another night Edward scores, on another night Rogic scores with a header, and we just got a bit of bad luck at the moment and these things turn around and we just need a couple of those last minute winners that Saint mentioned and the team will start performing better because we've got good players and they'll start performing. I also think the board's thoughts are, the manager won the trophies last season, therefore is a good manager. We backed him in the summer and gave him all the players we want, so the squad is stronger this year than it was last year. We've had his run of bad results is on a par with Gerrard's run of bad results last season. We've just had some really bad luck with injuries, with players being tested positive or being in an environment. You know, Christie having to miss it games because of the Scotland thing. Tumble having to miss games because of the under-21 thing. Edward being out because of COVID. El Hamed having to miss games because of COVID. Beaton missing games because of COVID. Celtic missing games because Nicola Sturgeon chucked a rattle out the pram. And then we've had Forrest out injured, Mikey Johnson out injured. I think the board are looking at it going, we've just had a hellish run of bad luck. And bad luck evens itself out over the season. We just need a game or two where we win. And I'm sure this is the thought process going into the Ross County game. And we've now got a run of winnable games. We will win one of those games and it will start to turn around because we just need a win a game and then it will then take us through. We'll build a bit of momentum. We'll win the cup. That will lift the team even further. We'll get to January and we'll beat Rangers in January. And do you know what? Under Steven Gerrard, from January through to March, every season, Rangers have run out of gas and gone through a spell of shite. And so Rangers will revert to that because that's what Rangers do. I am convinced that's the board's thinking. Do you think there's any... And when you see it from that perspective, you can then understand why you would say, so we don't need to sack the manager. So, Anthony, do you think there's any merit in the board's thinking if that's the way they're thinking?
Absolutely zero. That position is divorced from reality. Two realities. One, don't want to go into any great detail about the Rangers, but we've covered it in other podcasts. They have improved. They have players that are decent. They are, you know, let them do them, okay? And they are doing quite well right now, you know, even in Europe, okay? So that takes us back to us. Utter nonsense, because Neil Lennon has made bad choices throughout his Celtic career, first time and second time. Quite often when he has an option, he picks the wrong one. That was before he came back, but now he's back this season. You know, the obvious ones, you know, that have led to the Klujis, the Ferencváros, this, that, the next thing. There's been a whole bunch of them. His inability to learn from his own, not mistakes, but improvements. You know, the improvements that we made last winter after the break. You know, the two up front, it's not rocket science. His refusal to do that. And he'll blame fitness. Oh, Klamala's no fit. Griffith's no fit. He's no fit. It's just, there's always a full bench. Do you know what I mean? There's always a bench full of guys. He always ends up resorting to them. So at this point, I think he's tried everything except the 4-4-2. You know, I mean, that's what the pundits on Celtic TV keep going, you know, at this time of crisis, you need to go back to basics. Well, we haven't gone back to 4-4-2 yet. He keeps rotating around shite versions of what Brendan Rodgers used to, you know, succeed doing. He hasn't tried, you know, the old Strachan. Maybe that would work. Maybe that would be it. In reality, nothing is going to go work at this point. Watching the game yesterday, like you say, you guys were falling asleep before halftime. I went back to watch the highlights just before we started, and I was surprised by the energy in the first couple of moments of the highlights. And then it struck me that footballers like playing football. You know, so there will be that adrenaline of, oh, I've got my kit on, I've got my boots on. I've gone out, the stadium's empty, but I love playing football. You know, I never played in front of a crowd, but I certainly enjoyed the first 10 minutes of every football game I ever played in. And that's the same as Edward and McGregor and them all. And then, you know, as the game goes in, 10 minutes in, 20 minutes in, 30 minutes in, they remember, oh, no, this isn't great right now, is it? You know, and the heart goes, the chances get missed. And the malaise sets in quickly. And that is every single game for the last 103 days. I put it in a calculator earlier. Ferencváros was 103 days ago. And honestly, every single day since then, Lennon could and should have been fired. And now we're at this point where he might believe in himself. You know, in the same way Tommy Sheridan believes in him, goes on YouTube videos, leaves reality and posts these insane videos of how we're going to beat Rangers and AC Milan. I'm glad I only see these videos retrospectively. They're much funnier that way. But it's criminal at this point that Lennon hasn't resigned. It's absolutely criminal. You know, people could try and deflect it and say it's the board's fault or whatever, but if he loves the club, at this point we have proof that he doesn't love the club, because he should have resigned 3 weeks ago. He cannot fix this. That is blatantly obvious. He will leave and, you know, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, Simon Ferry YouTube videos tell us about, oh, for God's sake, what was it like under Lennon that time? Do you know, I don't know how long it'll take these stories to come out, but they're obviously going to come out. That is not a happy club. That is not a happy squad. He is not a happy man. Who would be inspired by that at this point? I think
Sorry, Anthony. Somebody made the analogy to me years and years ago when I was younger, and it's something that sticks with me. And he says, you know that way when you get up in the morning, you come downstairs? Now, I'm an only child, so you've got brothers and sisters. And you know something's not right. Either your brothers and sisters have been arguing, or your man dad has been arguing. You can just feel the atmosphere in the room. You know that the family are not happy campers. It's the same with footballers and your football club. You know instinctively by their body language and the way they behave on the pitch and how they perform. And I've been looking at that Celtic team now for as Brian, as Harry says there, for most of the season, and there's barely been a good game. There's something not right. And I don't know if it's the COVID thing, but it's possibly not to meet their stride. I don't know if it's missing the fans. Everybody talks about Celtic missing the fans, but do you not think Aberdeen miss their fans, or Hearts miss their fans as well? You know, at home games...
We seem to be uniquely the only club on the planet who's missing our fans.
And surely as professionals, it shouldn't matter if there's 100,000 in the ground or there's nobody in the ground, that you go and do your professional best. So the point I'm making here is that it's been obvious for some time that things haven't been right. It's been obvious without actually knowing anything. I don't have any great inside knowledge of what's happening, but I kind of come in this podcast and boast that I've got I'm in the know. I am not in the know, but what I do know is that for some time it has struck me as a normal fan that something's not right here. And if that's the case, then surely the directors must be getting that feeling as well.
Do you know what? So I had a conversation with someone a wee while ago who is no longer at Celtic. I asked what the difference was. And this is not for me, this is not a Brendan Rodgers is great or Neil Lennon is shite thing. This is why one coach is sought after by a team in the top 10 of the English Premiership and one isn't. But that's what the difference was. And Brendan Rodgers turned up at Lennox Town at 7:30 in the mornings, between 20 past and 7:30, and went to the gym with Chris Davis for an hour. And then at 8:30, Brendan Rodgers and the coaching staff had a breakfast meeting where they discussed where they were in the week in relation to the preparation for the next game and the individual needs of every single player. Now, some of them, the individual needs might have lasted a 30-second conversation and some might have been a 4 or 5 minute conversation. So this was 8:30 till 9:00 where they talked about where they were in the week, what they needed to do, what they were working on and what individual players needed. So then at about 9:10, the coaching staff then went away and worked on the coaching plan for the day. And between 9:30 and 9:45, they would then come back, download to everybody in the team, the coaching team, what the coaching plan for the day was. And between 9:45 and 10:00, that would get set up out on the park, out at Lennox Town. Players would start training at 10, right? What's the difference? And the other big thing was, on a Monday morning, if a stranger walked in at Lennox Town on Monday morning, you would not know whether Celtic had won, drawn or lost at the weekend. Brendan Rodgers was identical. What was it like under Neil Lennon? Well, Neil Lennon was still quite thorough, but he turned up about 9 in the morning and training started at 10. And if we hadn't won at the weekend, you knew it. Now, for me, because I hear a lot of people saying, what is the difference between, how can it be so dramatic between this season and last season? See that difference there? For me, that's where the marginal differences come in. That culture and that attitude and that ethos and that preparation and all that, when you've got somebody coming in at 7:30 and somebody coming in at 9 for the 10:00 preparation, that then doesn't create an overnight change in the culture. But it just chips away every week and every game and every month so that by the time you're 18 months, a year, 18 months down the line from that culture, that incremental change every week has then created a very different culture. And as I say, I'm not saying I know because I've not spoken to a single player, so I don't know. It's just when you hear these types of things, when you then think of your own work environment, when you've worked with someone who's very diligent and professional and knows what they're doing compared to someone who's a bit more fly by the seat of their pants, you just think of your own work environment and the implications that that has on the general professionalism of everybody in that department or everybody in that team. What are your thoughts on that, Anthony?
I mean, hard to disagree with. I mean, I was accused of pearl clutching when I got angry about him getting angry with Mikey Johnson. Remember Mikey Johnson got injured?
Yeah.
And he swore at him. And I had a major issue with that. And people were like, there's nothing to it. But it's like, it clearly wasn't an isolated incident. Do you know what I mean? It was a slipping mask, a display of his genuine character. And, you know, these guys are just going to get sick of that. You know, you can imagine the little French clique, you know, the day he tears into, I don't know, any one of the three, them all driving home going, what was that all about? You know, you can imagine it. I mean, it's not hard to imagine Neil Lennon trying to chew someone out under the flawed logic that it's going to work and it's going to benefit either a young player or an experienced player or whoever it may be. So, I mean, obviously, anyone with half a brain saw right through Brendan Rodgers, but you can buy into it. Do you know what I mean? At least it's positive. If the reverse is someone just, you know, getting angry and moaning and swearing, and people are going to say, you don't know, he's like, well, you see it, you know? So I don't think he is a particularly complex or analytical voice on the game of football, and players will see that. You know, these, I don't know, the French players will go to the French under 21 coach and, you know, see an elite coach doing his job. Others will be coming from other places, but ultimately they will be looking at Neil Lennon thinking, this isn't very impressive. This guy's not going to get the best out of me.
So on Saint, we have been knocked out of the Champions League. Mm-hmm. We are currently one goal away from having the all-time worst defensive record in the history of the Europa League. We are going to finish bottom of our Europa League group. We meekly get knocked out at home of the League Cup to lose our first cup game in umpteen years. And we are currently too many points for me to calculate off the lead of the SPFL. Do you think it's too late for the club to make a change?
No, I don't, but I actually think they've been caught by their pants down a wee bit, because they would not have envisaged this happening. And what I'm trying to say is, I don't believe they've got a contingency plan. I don't think they've got a plan B. And if we did sack him, then we have the difficulty of trying to procure a manager, a decent one, who might not come cheap. So, in terms of the budget, they won't have budgeted for that. I think all the budget went in players this summer. And we're still losing a lot of money through the COVID, because obviously you're not getting patrons coming along to Celtic Park and buying all the stuff that they normally buy. So, no, I don't think... I think that's the reason why he's not getting sacked, is that I genuinely believe that the directors are caught in the headlights here and they don't know what to do. And they're very, very fortunate that there's no crowds at Celtic Park, because I think given the last two home games would have been catastrophic in terms of the reaction of the crowd and the, you know, if you think it's bad, a couple of hundred guys outside, there might have been a couple of thousand that say that, I don't know. Or maybe things would have been better. Maybe people would have vented their spleen during the game and then just went home and happy that they got it off their chest. Because as a fan, I feel frustrated that I can't get it off my chest. You know, you sit in front of the telly and you're exasperated. You would just love to be there and give them a cheer, give them a roar, even just shout at them to try and inspire them to do better. But I think the one thing that's also keeping him a job is some misguided loyalty by the board towards him, because we've got the cup final coming up. Now, this is a chance to create a unique bit of history. And unfortunately, it's going to be a hollow achievement, given the fact that we're falling so far behind Rangers in the 10 in a row. But if we beat Hearts and win the cup final, then that gives Lennon a treble that he's winning off his own back, and also gives Celtic their fourth consecutive treble. A record that probably will never be beaten in the lifetime of Scottish football again. Very, very difficult to see that ever being anybody even coming close to that. So I do think in some ways the directors are saying, well, we can't very well sack him with a cup final coming up. So they're letting him stumble towards the cup final, and it could actually have been better for everybody concerned. If Aberdeen had won the semi-final, that might have prodded the directors into taking action. So I do think that A, I don't think the director saw this coming. And B, with a cup final coming up, they're going to look pretty foolish to sack a manager before a cup final and a chance of winning a treble.
So, Anthony, Saints then obviously brought a mind into focus about the proximity of the cup final. And this is my concerns about how this season ends. Or, you know, the board have come out tonight and said manager's definitely in charge, right? So he's got the Lille game on Thursday. So we get another humiliation in European football on Thursday night. Then we've got Kilmarnock at home on Sunday. So win, lose or draw, they're not going to sack him the week before the cup final, are they?
No, definitely not, because you should have been fired any time in the last, 3 weeks. So the Lille game will be the deadest of dead rubbers, because they've sacked their manager as well. So I don't know who they're bringing in, some new guy. Maybe they'll get a new guy bounced and give us a do-in. Maybe it'll just be a crap 0-0. You know what I mean? It really doesn't matter. Kilmarnock game, that's what I'm saying. The default feeling should be, we'll win the home game against Kilmarnock. But we'll go out there next weekend. Eamon Brophy will give us the runaround that, Stevie May gave us away last weekend, or the Ross County guy last, Kilmarnock won't be an easy win. That's no guaranteed win. We might win it, we might draw it, we might lose it. And then that will set us up for the cup final, where I don't think the predicament we're in now, I blame entirely on Lennon. So I don't think he deserves to win that cup. And I don't accept the idea that it would be hard to replace him, because right now we are terrible. So you could take the job, Harry, and you'd do as good a job as Neil Lennon is doing right now.
Down my feet, point. Please.
So if, fucking throw Yogi Hughes in there or someone, someone that will G them up, to use, some daft Scottish football language, that would be enough. I'd like to see. Yogi Hughes has won a Scottish Cup, hasn't he? I think with Inverness or Ross County or something. So I don't know, someone like that. Let someone go and else win it, because Lennon doesn't deserve. If he wins it, it'll just be like O'Neill's last cup win, where it's just like, brilliant, we've just blown the league and this is miserable. And this is not going to feel like a cup win. Whereas if we brought someone else in and it was their big day, we might get more of a kick out of it. And there might be a bounce for the second half of the season, even if it was a short-term fix. There's going to be no joy comes out of supporting Neil Lennon and Celtic now and the end of the season.
So, same, based on the fact that Board are coming out tonight, 2 weeks from the cup final, and saying he's definitely the manager, right? So that means he's definitely the manager for the cup final. Mm. Surely not. I would actually then find it strange if he lost the cup final and they sacked him. Because I would say, in terms of the damage to the club, losing, doing so shite in the league in the last few weeks is far more damage to the club than losing that cup final.
I think the cup final's coming at a bad time. It may have been better if the Scottish Cup just gets scrapped, to be honest, and be focused in the league. But we are where we are, and we knew at the beginning of the season that the cup final was going to be in December. So, I'm just surmising somehow that the board think that they will look pretty foolish if they sack a manager before a cup final, if they sack the guy who's gone to complete four. I know he's not won them all himself, but he's about to complete four. The club's about to complete, hopefully, four trebles in a row. So they'll see that they want a bit of stability there and a bit of continuity. But as I said earlier there comes a point where you hit such a low level of performance that it's actually criminal not to make change. And that change should have been made weeks ago. I'm on record there as saying at the beginning of the podcast that the turning point for me was Ross County, because it was just so bad. It wasn't just the fact Ross County beat us. The level of performance was absolutely abysmal. And it struck me at that point that there's no way back. I just cannot see a way back for this with the best will in the world. Another thing that we have to say as well is, do you give Neil Lennon more money in January? If they're going to keep him on, at least in the short term to the end of the season, what do you do in January? Do you turn around and say, right, we need to improve here, there's more money, and he goes and buys another Barkas in goals and he gets another Shane Duffy in? In which case, the manager that you bring in the summer has got less funds. Or do you say, no, hold on a minute, you've had plenty in the summer, you just need to struggle on with what you've got. So there's decisions to be made by the board, and I think that they're neglecting their duties, right? Because at the end of the day, they need to show leadership, and they're showing no leadership whatsoever. The only thing I'll give them credit for is coming out and making the statement and actually saying what they're saying, if that's what they believe. Because it's better that than sitting no saying anything. But then you made the point yourself there, and we've talked all the way through it. In my circle of friends, whether it's the guys on the website, or it's the guys off the Govan Emerald that I've known for years, or it's guys at your workmates or family, I don't know anybody who wants to keep him as manager now. That's a problem we've got. The board have dug themselves into a hole here, and I'll say it again for about the fourth time, it's going to finish in a very messy fashion.
So, Saint then, Anthony, Saint makes the valid point. So, say we get a result against Kilmarnock, right? So I suppose there's one option. We get a result against Kilmarnock and then we win the cup. And actually we go on a winning run. And until we play Rangers at Ibrox. Say we beat Rangers at Ibrox. They're definitely keeping Lennon if that happens. If we were to win every game, I don't think it will happen, right? But say we were to, because we've got Kilmarnock, Rangers. So Kilmarnock, Hearts in the cup. Then we've got Ross County at home, and then we've got somebody else, can't remember who it is, just between Christmas and New Year. Dundee United at home. So we've got coming up Kilmarnock at home, the Cup, Ross County at home, Dundee United at home. That's our, we get Hamilton away within that as well, sorry. So say we, wouldn't we be on the realms of possibility we win those games?
No, but listen, I said that before the Ross County game. I said, you know, this is, we've had a lot of European games. We've had a game at Pittodrie, which is difficult, a semi-final against Aberdeen, difficult. Easter Road can be a difficult place to go. And then I thought, you know, starting for the Ross County game in the Cup, there's a run of 7 or 8 games, winnable games, games you shouldn't just be winning, you should be winning comfortably. And look at the first two of them. A miserable, miserable afternoon we lost to Ross County and a mediocre draw against St Johnson.
No, I don't think we'll win those games. But say, Anthony, that we did win those games. Do you think they'll back Lennon and give him money in January?
No. I don't think there'll be a lot of investment. I think... Yeah, we shouldn't be trying to invest. We shouldn't be trying to spend money in January. It's a mugs game. Nobody ever buys anyone worth buying unless you're buying a Bruno Fernandes or someone, you know, some elite player that you can afford to buy. So it would just be short-term fixes for what? To chase Rangers' coattails? You know, there's no way we're winning that list of games.
Well, I was going to say, so then the other option is, say, and one of them is we win the Cup, but don't win all those league games and then lose at Ibrox. Another option is we either win the Cup or don't win the Cup, but basically we don't win all those games and then we lose at Ibrox. Do you think they would sack him at that point?
I think it would be an interim manager. You know, it'd be... Lennon, just get out the firing line. Kennedy, you pick the team till the end of the season. Flood the squad. You know, don't waste any money. Flood the squad with youth players and try and get the minutes up on youth players between then and the end of the season. And that might give us a head start for, you know, the next phase. If, you know, enough of the young players stepped up, that would be, to me, a sensible decision facing, you know, no chance of winning the league. And it might benefit us long term, but I can't see any situation where we invest heavily in January at all.
What about this scenario that I'm just thinking about as you're describing?
the top two teams get Champions League qualification this season from Scotland, don't they? Mm-hmm. What if in the back of our mind, we've always had it that Lennon's leaving this summer no matter what? We have an elite manager, person that we want to get in charge. We maybe don't have the person chosen, but that's the identikit of what we want. What if the attitude is we'll either win this league or we won't, but we just need to get through it to make sure that we don't blow second place at least. Because even if we finish second, we've got the same route, number of games that we had this season and last for Champions League qualification, and we're going to get an elite manager in, and we don't want, and if we, and he's not going to come just now. That's the other, you know, I came up with my earlier theory as to why they're not sacking Lennon, because they believe in him. The other potential is they don't believe in him, but they don't see the point getting in a guy trying to get in the candidate just now.
I think then it was a silly hand to play with regards to, you know, 10 in a row. However important or not important it was or is, you know, nobody's going to remember, oh, the time we qualified for the Champions League qualifiers back in 2020 or 2021. You know, in 30 years' time, whereas in 30 years' time, we might have, you might have been doing a podcast about the second 9 in a row the way you did the first one. You know, 10 in a row would have been history. Qualification for Champions League qualification is meaningless, long term. Although I hope we do it, obviously.
I wrote an article for the website about 18 months ago and I got slaughtered for it on Twitter, where I said that it was feasible that the gap between Celtic and Rangers at that point wasn't as much as we thought it was. And it would only take us to slip a wee bit and for them to come up and rise up a wee bit and we would meet in the middle. In fact, to be honest, at the moment, they've surpassed us. Which I never saw that coming. I thought it would be itchy-peachy between the two of us. But we laugh at Rangers and their finances. The Rangers directors have gambled and have actually thrown a double six in some ways this season because they are up to their necks in debt. They've got the obvious stuff about they've had to convert the debts into loans, which can't go on forever. And we keep saying, oh, this is the season that they're going to implode, this is the season they'll go bust again. But in essence, what's going to happen here is they're going to win the league. They're going to get into the Champions League qualifiers. Now, frankly, if they get the teams we've played in the last couple of seasons, I don't see them failing. Because the one thing that Gerrard seems to do is he can organise a team to play in European football. They can keep a clean sheet away from home. They can beat teams at Ibrox. That you look at the results in Europe in the past 18 months, then it's grudgingly impressive. So if that's the case that they win the league and get through the qualifiers and get into the Champions League and they get the £30 million jamboree and by that time the fans are allowed back and it could be in excess of £30 million, that's their debts paid off. They're back in an even keel at that point. So that big financial advantage that we always laughed at, we've had for the last 5-10 years, goes out the window at that point. In fact, it goes right out the window because we'll be in a position where we're not likely to qualify for the Champions League, but we still need to get rid of the dross that we've managed to buy, and also that we'll need to go out and buy a better class of player. And as we've discussed there, and I think Harry makes a decent point, we'll probably need to invest in a new manager as well and pay Lennon off. So that this financial advantage that we've got in the space of, I don't know, about 12 weeks has just been flying right out the window.
We've seen enough of good managers getting a tune out of players that have been written off for me to basically, I wouldn't give up on many of the players in the Celtic squad right now. I think a better manager would come in and do better with them. So I know what you said, it was dross, but I don't know.
Well,
time will tell.
Anthony, what I'm referring to that is, I'm referring to that Barkas. I'm referring to Duffy. The guys that were meant to be brought in to take us to the next level, they have taken us to the next level, but the levels though went up, the levels went down. It's embarrassing the amount of money we paid in the summer and the return that we're getting for it, because the one thing that you do have to give the board credit for, they backed Lennon in the summer. And they also kept their main assets. So the one thing that Lennon, whatever the outcome is, whenever he does go, if he does go, he can't turn around and say that the board didn't back him in the summer. The board backed him at the hilt. No Celtic fan that I am aware of was complaining in the summer about the quality of player coming in and the money that the club were spending.
That's my point. I think a better manager could get a tune out of. I mean, Barkas hasn't he been a world beater up to this point, but he's a Greek international that had won titles in the Greek league, I imagine, for AEK Athens. You know, it's obviously not started well, but I wouldn't give up on Barkas if we bring in a better manager. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've got Stevie Woods and we always lean on him and make our keepers work good. But, you know, I still wouldn't give up on him. Duffy is a classic Neil Lennon waste of money and was possibly always going to be that. So I agree with you on that one. But he's only a loan signing anyway, so he'd be gone anyway.
That brings us on to recruitment, because what scouts do we have, and who is going out and saying, by the way, I've got a cracking goalkeeper here for Greece. I know I'm picking in Barkas here, but I really shouldn't be picking an individual. But you can go through the last 18 months, even at the end of Rodgers' reign. We were saying the quality of signings that we brought in, we have pissed money away time after time after time.
Well, and that's the whole problem. We don't have any scouts.
So how do we get to buy players? Is it YouTube videos?
No, we get that's the whole problem. This is the thing that riles the life out of me. The recruitment we've done the last 12 months has been that shite recruitment. But that all stems back to a decision 10 years ago when we decided to become a player trading club and didn't have an infrastructure to do it. It's bonkers. Utter bonkers. So it's one of my things that bugs the life out of me, because it's been written about on the site for 10 years that we need to have scouts in countries to speak to people.
Mm-hmm. You need, in these countries, you need your finger on the pulse. I think the one thing that frustrates me a wee bit is Rangers signed the boy Barisic, a left back. Now, that's the kind of market we should have been in. We should have been aware of Barisic. And if he was any good, we should have, rather than sending ball and goalie or whoever it was to replace Tierney, it should have been somebody of Barisic's ilk that we should have been getting.
We knocked him back.
We knocked him back, oh great.
Because Rangers have got the same fantastic scouting system that we've got. They've got it a wee bit better now. But we were sent Barisic's details at the same time as Rangers were sent Barisic's details, and Brendan Rodgers looked at his Y-Scout videos and said, I don't rate him. So on this fantastically upbeat... I'm going to ask the obvious question. Saint, do you think we could still win the league?
No, I think that ship has sailed. You know, I was telling my son quite proudly the other day that I remember the 79... the 81 and the 86 league winning seasons, where we went in terrible, you know, we went a poor run, and nobody shouted that they wanted to sack Billy McNeil or Davy Hay. The fans rallied together. There was a bond between the players and the fans, and it's no coincidence that in dramatic circumstances, in those three seasons, we ended up winning the league. I just can't see that, because the fans are no united. The players look disjointed. Lennon looks as if he's to me, he looks like a broken man. Even though he might believe it himself, that I don't think anybody else believes it. Another thing as well I need to say here is the one thing he has been unlucky with is the fact that Rangers are in some run. I mean, in any other season, Rangers might have lost two or three other points, which would have made it manageable for us. So it would still have been within their grasp. To be honest, I've lost count of the points Rangers are ahead. And this thing we keep coming up with, we'll win more games in hand. Do you know what? There's a good chance we will now. And we'll be even further behind. So in terms of the league, I hate to say, I certainly wouldn't be giving up in my heart. But my head tells me that the league titles, that ship has sailed several weeks ago.
Anthony?
Not a chance. And I think I regret is the fact that I always thought when it came to an end, I remember the great Fabio Capello AC Milan team in the early 90s went on like a, you know, a year plus run undefeated. And then they got beat by Parma at home, a Faustino Asprilla free kick, if I recall. And they still went on to win the league, I believe. But it was, you know, it was a moment where their infallibility was exposed. You know, it was the end of an era. You know, Van Basten was finished. You know, it was a new phase for Milan, and it happened that day. And the San Siro was full, and all the fans there stayed and applauded. Do you know what I mean? It was a great moment. Everyone got to appreciate what they'd been through. Yes, we lost on the day, but ultimately we've been privileged to have this era. And I always kind of thought there'd be a moment for us like that, where we'd get to applaud Brown and McGregor and Forster and Gordon and, you know, Boyata and, you know, every one of them that played over that nine in a row and deserved that moment to an extent. And I thought we'd get a nice moment like that, but we're not. You know, obviously because of COVID, nobody's in the stadium, but it's going to end poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really sad. But I hope the players realise that we, you know, we do love them and we do appreciate their effort.
See, Anthony, we need, it's only a personal thing. I don't know if you would agree with me, but standing in a car park in the dark, throwing things at the players' cars, isn't he going to make them play better?
Well, that's my point. You know, I'm not explaining why that happened, but
I totally get people's frustrations, and there's nobody more frustrated than myself. That you're sitting in the house and you can't get to, as I said earlier, you can't get to vent your spleen and frustration. But the mob rule thing of people coming up and throwing things, throwing missiles, that's disgusting. And even the chants against Neil Lennon, get to fuck, are totally tasteless in the extreme. Because quite frankly, no matter how bad the results get, Neil Lennon, for his service, deserves much, much better than that. You're talking about a modern generation who would have been chanting things about Billy McNeil and Jock Stein in previous years. It just wouldn't have happened. I don't know if it's the media. I don't know if it's the social media, the Facebook, the instant news that we get or whatever it is, but there seems to be an anger. I mean, it was one of the guys on the website chat that had mentioned after we lost to Rangers, that there were signs that the fans were really getting uneasy. And the way he described it is quite a good description. He said it's like being in a fort with a cavalry when you can hear the Indians beating their drums outside and you know they're coming to get you. That's how he described the feeling of Celtic fans after that Rangers defeat. And that's ultimately what's happened since then. The Indians have broke through the fort and they're running amok. They're setting the place on fire.
But that massacre could have been avoided if perhaps some hypothetical cowboy that the Indians were after walked out and sacrificed himself saved everyone in the fort. Yes. Neil Lennon did not sacrifice himself. He put himself, he said, everyone rally round me and we all die and we all suffer. And that's Lennon's legacy here. He had the chance to stop it. 100 days ago, 50 days ago, 30 days ago, 20 days ago, yesterday, today, tomorrow, and he didn't do it. I have no sympathy for Neil Lennon here. None.
So there's been a lot of the mood. I notice our podcast here has principally been critical of the manager. A lot of the mood into the trust in an open meeting. I was doing other stuff. The trust in an open meeting, and it was very much critical of the board here, which I thought was very strategically done, since the chairman of the trust is one of the drinking buddies of the manager that you castigated in the Ferencváros podcast, Anthony. Do you put the blame here with the board or the manager?
Obviously, like I say, one man can walk out and sacrifice himself to the Indians. Two men could do that. You know, there's only two people that have that power. Lennon's one of them. That would have released, you know, been a release valve. Lowell would. I'm going to give Lowell the benefit of the doubt. 9-0. Made a bad call on this occasion. I've got one pal that's on, you know, first name terms with Peter Lowell. And he was in touch with me tonight. And at this point, it's just about Dermot Desmond's ego. You know, you've got sort of Daniel Plainview, you know, moustache twirling billionaire psychopath who is not going to bow to mob rule. So to go back to what Saint was saying, yeah, that stuff is disgusting. And we have an owner of a club, and it's literally a little glamour hobby of his that is not going to succumb to that. So, you know, we're not going to, there's not going to be a revolution. We're not going to take over a billionaire. He's not going to remove his man, who's actually had an extended period of excellence. And the guy below him is the guy that I'm going to blame, because I think that's the guy that should walk or could walk. So, yeah, some people are blaming the board. You know, they, obviously, they can fix the situation. I don't know why they're not. But my mate does suggest, yes, it's all about Dermot Desmond at this point, not crumbling.
I said earlier on that it's a dereliction of duty, because there comes a point when no matter what company you're running, if you, it doesn't need to be a football club. If you're running a company with, where the level of performance gets to such a bad level that you've got to say that this isn't right here, we need new management. Because in order to get the level of performance back up to what's required, and you know, we keep talking about how it's a PLC. The one thing that might shift them is if the share price begins to drop, then you might see a wee bit of nerves with the big shareholders who are certainly in paper terms are going to see a loss in finance. So yeah, there comes a point, no matter what your organisation is, no matter what the management structure is, if you see a level of performance drop as much as that, and it's basically down to the manager at the end of the day, then you need to say, well, that manager goes, because we need to get somebody else in who can motivate, who can organise, and who can bring us from the lowest of lows back up to where we think we should be performing. And as I said there, it is a dereliction of duty, because Lovell earns a lot of money. He earns far in excess of what he should be earning. Nobody in Scottish football should be earning the money that he is for what he contributes. And this is the one time that we've looked to him to stand up and show leadership and do something. And judging by that statement today, he's failed dismally.
After the Ross County game, I told myself, because my Celtic TV subscription is a 12-month thing that I'd started in January, I guess, years ago. And I just noticed that. And I remember in previous years, they just take the money out of your account. You know, they don't ask you if you want to renew it. They just take it. And I'm happy to do that, or have been happy to do that. But after the Ross County game, I said, if Lennon's still the manager by Monday morning, so this is last Monday, I'm cancelling it. I don't want to cancel it, but I'm going to cancel it. And then we've lost twice since then, or a draw and a loss since then. So I went on the WorldPay thing and cancelled it this evening. And I'll renew it as soon as, you know, there will be a day when Lennon isn't the Celtic manager and I am able to, you know, renew my subscription. But for the time being, you know, the board can know that my $150 has been withdrawn from the budget.
Do you know how bad things are? I've got two friends in particular who've been Celtic fans all their days. Days have travelled abroad, that they're faithful through and through, and two of them contacted me in recent times, the last couple of weeks, and said, I hope we get beaten Saturday to get shot at him. Now, I don't feel like that at the moment. My sense of loyalty is still that every time that the game kicks off, I'm 100% behind them, no matter who the manager is. Let's argue about it after the game if we don't win, right? But once the game starts, I'm behind the players 100%, I'm behind, still behind Neil Lennon 100%. Maybe misguided, but that's the way it is. But when you hit people, these guys are like, you know, Celtic fans, you know, their sense of loyalty through the years has been huge. And if they feel it, that's just a sad indictment about how badly things have been allowed to go here. And when you're in a situation where you know, huge Celtic fans are actually, if it gets shot, Neil Lennon.
Do you remember Bill McNeil's last season? and you just wanted, a bit like you're saying about, you just want everybody to put out their misery. And every time you thought, do you know what, see if we lose next week, this will be it, and we can all get put out of our misery, and he would win. And it's not that you didn't want Celtic to win, but you knew all that was happening was it was just delaying the point where we would win, but we'd probably draw the game after that, draw another game, then lose one, and then we would win again. And we would always, you know, like the night in Monty Python, you would just keep going. When everybody knows he's getting cut to buggery, he would just keep going.
It's only a flesh wound.
It's only a flesh wound, exactly. And there's a part of just put us all out of our misery here, including the legend. Just put him out of his misery.
The one thing Neil Lennon should bear in mind here is this is not personal against Neil Lennon. It's funny you mentioned Billy McNeil there, because I love Billy McNeil, but Jesus, I grew up with Billy McNeil as a captain and a manager for about the first 18 years of my life that I remember Billy McNeil was Celtic. But there came a point that season where people knew that his time was up. Mm-hmm. And it happens to even the best of managers have a lifeline. And it happened also, sad to say, but another hero of mine was Tommy Burns. I remember when Fergus sacked Tommy, I looked at it objectively and I thought, do you know what? We really need a change here, because this is the working, and I think it was actually taking a toll on Tommy's health towards the end of his time at Celtic as well. So if Neil Lennon listens to this and thinks they've all got it in for me and feels a bit paranoid, then I'm sorry, it's not personal. If Billy McNeil can be sacked and Tommy Burns can be sacked, you better believe Neil Lennon can get sacked.
So we've got a game on Thursday night and then we've got a game on Sunday. So, Anthony, what do you think is going to happen in those two games?
I honestly, I think Thursday night, you know, bear in mind how crap the streams were last time around. You know, I don't know, I'll go a run or a walk or read a book. Do you know what I mean? What a meaningless football match. I don't really enjoy friendlies anyway. And this is tantamount to a friendly. I probably won't watch on Thursday night. Of course I will. What else am I going to do? And then, you know, I'll watch the league game and hope we win it. But it'll be more of the same. Yeah, it's not a good time.
Saint, what's your expectation for those two games?
Well, the European games, to intents and purposes, it's a waste of time. So what I would like to see him do is I would like to see him give some of the fringe players a wee go against Lille to see if you can maybe get one or two players who perform well and they can carry that into the Kilmarnock game. And I'm thinking of the guy Sorrow in midfield, who we've never seen, to intents and purposes, because and you can correct me here, I don't think that guy's played a full game yet. You know, I'm just dying to see him play a full game to see what he's got, and this is a perfect occasion. Give him a run in the team, give Turnbull a run in the team, because he looks enthusiastic. He added a wee bit of energy when he came on Sunday. He sort of, for a short period, he raised things. He nearly scored a goal with a deflected shot, because he at least had the sense to try and shoot once in a while rather than pass the ball to the side. And there might be another couple of players there as well. I'm scrambling here off the top of my head to give them a chance in order just to stake a claim. So that if you were to beat Lille and you can say, oh, do you know what? These two guys played well. Why don't we carry that forward into the Kilmarnock game, and we might gain a wee bit of momentum here, rather than playing the same guys and or trying them in different positions who have let you down in the previous five European games? Then, you know, try something different.
We could give Welsh his first game since the Rangers game, and then not play him again for 3 months. We could do something like that.
That boy got hung out to dry that day. That was a shame.
Yeah.
Well, on that really positive, upbeat note, I will say, guys, thanks very much.
Right, hail, hail.
Cheers.
Just one thing before you go, Harry. That was me being positive. That's about as positive as we can get in the current climate.
Bring me sunshine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that podcast, if you can enjoy it at the moment. I think you can only really try and appreciate why somebody else has arrived at a completely different opinion to you if you try and put yourself in their shoes and try and think through, you know, how you think their mind's working. And say, so the only things I can think of are the things that I said about they think Neil Lennon's a really, really good manager and he's just going through a bad patch just now. It's the only reason I can think of for why a change is not going to happen. But anyway, enough of me. Don't forget, the Celtic FC Foundation is doing its usual Football for Good campaign over Christmas time. And I would urge you to go online if you're in a fortunate position to still be in a job in the current climate. There are many, many who are less fortunate than you, and the Foundation's doing a brilliant job. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was St. Anthony and Anthony Murray saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
World where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years, never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me